Kraszewski, Member Programs Lead at the League, and I want to thank you for joining another important webinar today. Today's webinar is titled Michigan Delegation Leads Efforts to Protect Main Street Businesses. The Relief for Main Street Act would build on what is already working across the country. The legislation creates a new $50 billion fund that would provide direct allocations to cities, counties, and states to seed and scale small business local relief funds. The funds would provide funding to small businesses with fewer than 20 employees, minority-owned businesses, small businesses in low-income and rural communities, businesses outside the mainstream banking system, and tribal businesses. We'll hear from United States Representatives Dan Kilby and Fred Upton, co-sponsors of this bill, on the benefits it would have on the main streets across Michigan. A few notes before we get started. Following the presentation, I will be facilitating a Q&A session with participants. To submit questions, please type them in the chat box on the upper left side of your screen. Following today's session, we will also email today's PowerPoint to all participants. And I know we have a few members of the media who are joining us today via webinar. You can also submit your questions via that attendee chat, as I mentioned. And now let me formally introduce our slate of speakers today. Born and raised in Flint, Congressman Dan Kilby is a lifelong Michigander. In Congress, he has proven he can bring people together and get real results for his constituents in Michigan. Congressman Kilby holds various leadership positions in Congress. As Chief Deputy Whip, part of the Democratic leadership team in the 116th Congress, he acts as an important liaison among members of Congress and the leadership to build support for Democratic priorities and legislation. Congressman Kilby serves on the prestigious Ways and Means Committee, the oldest and one of the most powerful committees in the United States House of Representatives. On the committee, he works to lower the cost of healthcare premiums and prescription drugs, protect Social Security and Medicare, negotiate fair trade deals, and create a tax system that benefits working families. The committee also has vast jurisdiction over important programs, including unemployment insurance, enforcement of child support laws, temporary assistance for needy families, and foster care and adoption programs. Before being elected to Congress, Congressman Kilby co-founded and served as the president of the Center for Community Progress, a national nonprofit organization focused on urban land reform and revitalization. He also founded Michigan's first land bank, the Genesee County Land Bank, which is responsible for tens of millions of dollars in redevelopment in Flint. The Genesee County Land Bank later served as a model for over 100 other land banks across the nation. Previously, Congressman Dan Kilby served as the Genesee County Treasurer, on the Genesee County Board of Commissioners, and on the Flint Board of Education. Additionally, he worked for 8 years at the Whaley Children's Center, a residential treatment facility in Flint for children who have experienced trauma and abuse. Congressman Kilby resides in Flint Township with his wife, Jennifer. They have two children. Dan's oldest son, Ryan, and his wife, Ginger, are the parents of their first two grandchildren, Caitlin and Colin. Also joining us is Congressman Fred Upton, who represents Michigan's 6th Congressional District. Prior to his election to Congress, Fred worked for President Ronald Reagan in the Office of Management and Budget. While at OMB, he learned from President Reagan's example that it does not matter who gets the credit as long as the job gets done. This has been his approach since he was first elected to Congress in 1986 and continues today. From 2010 to 2016, Fred was selected by his House colleagues to serve as chairman of the Committee on Energy and Commerce. This pivotal committee has jurisdiction over matters concerning energy, healthcare, the environment, telecommunications, commerce, trade, as well as oversight and investigations. Hard work and bipartisan success was a staple during Fred's tenure as chairman of the committee. Under Fred's leadership, the committee passed 354 legislative measures through the House and saw 202 of those signed into law by the president. Fred currently serves as the top Republican leader of the Subcommittee on Energy, which has jurisdiction over national energy policy. In addition to serving on the Energy and Commerce Committee and as the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Energy, Fred also serves on the Subcommittee on Health and the Subcommittee on Consumer Protection and Commerce. Fred holds a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Michigan, and he and his wife, Amy, have two adult children. Thank you all, and I believe I'm going to turn it over to Congressman Kilby to kick us off today.
Well, first of all, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to so many friends, people that I've worked with, and maybe some new folks that I have not yet worked with, but, you know, my history has been one where I've had a very close relationship with the Michigan Municipal League for a long time. And I appreciate the important leadership role that you play. And I particularly appreciate the partnership that we have around this particular issue. And I'm also very glad to be joined by my friend, Fred Upton. Fred and I have worked together. I've only been in Congress now for 8 years. Fred, let's just say a few years longer than that. But he and I have worked really well together, whether it's on this legislation or for me, the moment where I really needed allies, when my hometown of Flint was really in trouble. I'm sure you're all quite familiar with the crisis that Flint faced. Fred was one of those folks who then in the majority was willing and really energetic in his support for my efforts to provide relief to my hometown. So we've come again together on this legislation, which is intended to deal with one of the bigger challenges that we face as a result of this COVID-19 crisis. And having said that, I want to make one thing clear. There is no one silver bullet that's going to solve the many problems that we face as a result of this. This is a health crisis that is at the same time an economic crisis. But what we need to be able to do is scale and tailor the response to the crisis itself, to the real needs that are out there. And having said that, one very important aspect of support that we still need to get across the finish line is more direct support for state and local government. That we can just sort of stipulate to that. There's another piece, though, that we know we need to address, and that is support for Main Street, for those small businesses that really are the fabric of our cities and towns, our smaller communities and our larger communities. And that's what we're trying to get at with the legislation this bipartisan legislation that Congressman Upton and I, along with Congressman Dwight Evans and Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, both from Pennsylvania, have supported. So the Relief for Main Street Act is intended to add one more tool to the toolbox that we need to deal with the financial impact of the coronavirus pandemic. This would be in addition to what we think is the successful Paycheck Protection Program, which I support, and was a part of the bipartisan effort that has resulted in four significant pieces of legislation passed by Congress in a bipartisan fashion. We're still working to get the next step done in a bipartisan fashion. But I supported the Paycheck Protection Program, but knowing that there are still a lot of very small businesses, especially those small companies with 20 or fewer employees, that have either not have had access to PPP or don't fit the PPP guidelines on the appropriate uses, like a small restaurant that wants to continue to provide certain services. They may not quite fit what the PPP dollars were intended to support. We know that there have been big impacts. Small businesses, especially those small storefront businesses in Main Street, have been impacted acutely. And as local leaders, you know how important these are. They're not only the drivers of local economies, but they're the fabric of your community. It's part of what holds the community together, those local restaurants, local retailers. It is the place that makes your community what it is. And so we want to make sure that we're using every possible tool and every door available to get help to those small businesses. So this effort, again, builds on the success of the Paycheck Protection Program, which, as you know, uses essentially financial institutions, banks, CDFIs, credit unions, to deliver forgivable loans to small businesses on terms that are defined by the Act. We believe that we need to go beyond that and support those local emergency relief funds that have been set up in communities to give direct support through grants and in some cases loans to those very small businesses, often minority-owned, women-owned, veteran-owned businesses, again, that don't have a financial structure or meet the specific criteria for the Paycheck Protection Program, but are really important small businesses that we want to make sure stay open. So in short, that's what this is intended to do. Designate these dollars, up to $50 billion, to go out based on a formula that has been well established, to get into the hands of locally driven relief funds to make local decisions about the local businesses that we want to make sure survive this difficult time and are there as our economy stands back up again. So that's what this legislation is intended to do. It's bipartisan in its effort. It's going to take some heavy lifting to get it included in one of the next pieces of legislation. And that's why the people on this call are so important. We really need your voices. You know, what Fred and I say, or Dwight Evans, or Brian Fitzpatrick say to our colleagues is one thing. You know, we can have some influence, but there's nothing that has the influence of a constituent. And so for those of you who are willing to step up and allow your voices to be heard on this, we think it would make a big difference. So with that, I'll stop and turn it back to the moderator, and anxious to hear Fred.
Excellent. Hello. Thank you so much, Congressman Kilby. And I think we have Congressman Upton here. We'll take over. Congressman Upton, I think you might be muted.
Mr. Upton, you can try pressing star 6 to unmute.
All right, thank you all for being here with us.
Now do you hear me?
Yes, you hear me now?
All right,
we
I hit star 6. All right, I had two different systems here. So anyway, thanks very much for doing this. I heard Dan's presentation. He's right on. We got to get this done. Look, in divided government like we have today, if you're not working together, you're not going to get anything across the finish line. This is so important, and it really set the stage with what we did with the PPP program. And I know Dan and I had a good number of conference calls with our local lenders and community leaders and state banking folks and others to make sure that we were involved. It's sort of interesting that we still have $100 billion that hasn't been untapped yet. That program's still available, and of course, we worked hard on putting together a bipartisan package that added to the flexibility. So we, in essence, took that 8 weeks that you had and moved it to 24 weeks to try and verify that the percentage of money that you received as a loan could be converted to a grant with employee salaries, as well as insurance, that type of thing. But we also lowered that 75% of the loan to 60% to be able to qualify to convert it over. But, you know, as I've talked to a number of our community leaders throughout our district, and of course I represent Southwest Michigan, so whether it's Kalamazoo or Benton Harbor, St. Joe, or wherever it might be, so many different small businesses may not have had that existing relationship with a credit union or a community bank, or certainly some of the bigger banks like Fifth Third or Comerica, et cetera. So they lost out. And that's why this bill is so important. And Dan said it is going to take some heavy lifting, and it will. You know, I expect, and I just got off a Zoom call with Steny Hoyer. I'm on the Problem Solvers Caucus. That's a bipartisan group of 50 members, 4 from Michigan, Slotkin, Debbie Dingell, myself, and Paul Mitchell. We're anxious to try and see legislation move, particularly now in the Senate. That's the next step. On the next phase of what we have to do. And frankly, that's where we need your support, not only with colleagues that of Dan and mine across our state. Get them to co-sponsor this. Call them and talk to them about the importance of it, that how this is really an important foot in the door to try and recover from this terrible crisis that's impacted maybe our state worse than any others in terms of percentage of deaths, number of positive cases, all those different things, particularly as we are beginning to open, especially in light that we may see a second wave. I mean, we're seeing a number of states, Texas, Arkansas, Arizona today, I saw the national news. Steny Hoyer just referenced it now in terms of his call as well. So, you know, this, we need to be prepared. And, you know, part of getting our economy moving again is everybody needs to get moving again. And this is a special lifeline, I would call it, to our small businesses, particularly in some of our urban settings. So contact your member of Congress, get them to co-sponsor this. Dan and I are going to do whatever heavy lifting we need to do to try and get it to the forefront. But, you know, this will provide the funds for small businesses with fewer than 20 employees, particularly minority-owned businesses in low-income and rural communities, folks that are the most vulnerable, to get it, get them off the dime and to begin to move in. So I'm glad that Dan asked me to be part of this team. And I appreciate all your efforts. And I think Dan and I are ready to take some questions before we move off onto other busy agenda items as we all work out of our homes. So thank you. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you so much. So we do have a couple of questions that have come in. What is the timeline for the next possible stimulus plan so we make sure we reach out before then?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we have passed a bill in the House that was, you know, a more partisan version of the next step. We're hoping to see something back from the Senate. I did hear some reference by Leader McConnell in the Senate that the Senate's likely to move something that would be focused on another area of interest, I know, for the people on the call, and that's support for state and local government. So that would hopefully come sooner rather than later. And then we may have yet another step that deals with some economic stimulus. This is that moment where we've had good unity, to be honest. And, you know, if somebody would have told us 6 months ago that in the space of about 6 weeks' time we would pass four bipartisan bills with the sort of support of the President of the United States and commit, you know, over $2 trillion to a problem that we didn't even know existed at that point, I would have said you were nuts. So we've been able to come together. It does get more difficult as we get deeper into the crisis, but I think there's some common purpose here around state and local government and to make sure that we finish the job when it comes to small business. So I can't put a date on it, but we're going back next in the next 2 weeks for about a week and a half of session. And the hope is that we're going to be able to seize upon that moment to get something done on state and local. And then this may be one of the things that we can push to get attached to that next piece of legislation. I don't know, Fred, if you have particular thoughts, but that's the way I see things.
Yeah, I support money for our state and locals. I'm a co-sponsor of the SMART Act. I think it's H.R. 7010, 7010, I think is the bill number, so you can watch it online. And it's a bipartisan bill. It's in the House and the Senate. And what it does, it's got $500 billion for states and locals, locals being counties and cities. So I'm part of the Problem Solvers Caucus. We reached out to not only the National Association of Counties, but League of Cities to earn their support, as well as the Governors Association. It's based not on politics, but on numbers. So population, COVID cases, and loss of revenue in this calendar year. With some guideline, so it's not going to bail out pension systems from the past, et cetera. It's really COVID-related. But those three things, frankly, I think Michigan does pretty well under that formula, unfortunately, because of our COVID cases and our loss of revenue. And no one wanted to see this happen. And, you know, I talked to one of my state legislators earlier today, and that loss of revenue is continuing. I mean, most businesses, even though we're starting to open up, they don't pay that sales tax, they don't refer it back to Lansing until the end of the month or maybe even at the end of the quarter. And of course, they delayed the April 15th tax date to July 15th, as well as the first and second quarterly payments until July 15th. So there's no revenue still coming into Michigan. Auto sales, which is the big generator of this, of course, they were closed for a while. They've started again, but you're not going to see that sales tax from the sale of a $30,000 car for some time in terms of going to the coffers in Lansing. So we need this. And I think that under that formula, again, we're going to do better than, you know, a lot of the other states. But I don't sense that the Senate is going to take it up until next month, July. They're doing a lot of things. Things are beginning to come together. And that's where this bill, that's where we have to have our hand up. That's where we have to say, look at all the bipartisan support here, Republicans and Democrats on board. It ought to be part of that package, either when it goes to conference with the House passed bill and the Senate bill, or we just parachute it in, as they say, into the Senate language, and then they jam us in the House with one vote, but it being part of the package. That's why co-sponsors are really important, not only in the House, but also in the Senate, because that's where the leaders, they're going to look to see whether this is actually going to, quote, get votes to get it done or not. I think the president will sign the SMART Act. I think it'll be part of that. So, again, things that are bipartisan work, but it probably doesn't get done, the SMART Act, until the end of July. We're supposed to be in session. We come back in another week and a half, the end of the week, and work maybe through that weekend, Dan. They're telling us, because we got votes Friday and Monday, and we don't have a lot of flights coming back and forth. And then we'll be off the 4th of July. We can come back for 10 days the end of July as well. So something tells me it won't get done until the end of July. But we got a little time. So weigh in with your legislators. Call them up. We're all home. Nobody's traveling. We're all in our district as we should be. So I sure hope you have a relationship with your member of Congress, wherever they might be, because they better be in their district and doing the work that Dan and I have been doing for the last 100 days.
Excellent. So shifting back to the Relief for Main Street Act, specifically, what would the community's role be in the process? Would cities or communities apply for funding and then redistribute to local businesses?
Well, this is Dan. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, it depends on the community. We did want to have a formula and a distribution process that wasn't overly cumbersome. So we used what has been traditionally used as the Community Development Block Grant formula, with an exception. So the entitlement communities would receive direct allocations and determine for themselves how they wanted to either use an existing relief fund that is already established, like the one we have here in Flint, or create one that's designated for these specific purposes. And the purposes are defined in the legislation. It's basically providing relief to these small businesses, 20 or fewer employees, or in distressed communities, 50 or fewer employees. For the non-entitlement communities, we added a bit of a rural bonus. An additional support so that it wasn't strictly only based on CDBG, which obviously tends to skew toward particular communities. But because we know we've got a problem in rural America, rural Michigan, small town America, there's a bonus so that those dollars would flow through states to non-entitlement communities. But we plussed up that section so that we wouldn't give some short shrift to those small town main streets that really need help. And they would have to apply for those dollars the same way the CDBG formula has them applying for dollars to their state governments.
Thank you. I know we have some of our smaller communities on the call today. And they're asking if you can speak to if you see this as competitive for small communities who feel that they oftentimes lose out when competing with larger cities with more resources.
Well, the intention would be that it would be essentially formulaic in the sense that, you know, dollars can come in. I can't speak to how each of the states might work on that, but I do think the intent is, especially with this rural bonus that we put in, to make sure that we're reaching every community.
I might just also add that, you know, what we saw with the PPP program, I mean, this was a new program. No, never. You know, it was amazing success. We came together as a Congress, as we should, and it was gone. The money was gone in 10 days. I mean, I had people, they were in tears. I heard a case of one of my colleagues, someone who actually committed suicide because they didn't get it, and they just didn't know how they're going to live without it, not realizing that, thank goodness, we came back. And we had another injection of funds to refill that program. If this goes off to the races, I mean, if it's like, you know, really does what we think that it can do, and there's a big demand, there's not a reason why we don't have to come back. I mean, we're close to the end of the fiscal year now. We're going to be doing the appropriation bills one at a time. We're going to try to get them all done. Start October 1st. Not too far away, we'll have a pretty good sense as to what the demand was and whether there should be an increased, allocation as we go down the road. And again, we all wanted this to be over by Easter. I say that with a smile. But most of us knew that it wasn't going to be the case. We certainly want it. We don't want a second big wave here. We don't know how long, seriously, this is going to last. So what is it that we can do to help? And if this works, if the program works, and there's an increased demand, it doesn't necessarily have to be a one-time deal.
Thank you so much. I think we have one more question that I've seen come through, and that is, you mentioned reaching out to our legislators at this time. What's the best way for our members to do that? Is it a phone call? Is it an email? Is it a letter? Is it a resolution? What do you recommend?
Call them. Call them.
Yeah.
Don't do a letter. Remember, our D.C. offices, first of all, you do a letter, it goes to D.C. Most people don't realize this, but because of the they had a real threat in the Senate a number of years ago, all the mail gets opened in Ohio. It gets baked in an oven to make sure it doesn't have rosin. That was the contaminant, the very deadly thing. So your mail, when it comes to D.C., looks like a potato chip, and it gets there about 2 weeks after you mail it. Email works, but I would hope that you all can go to your mayor or your city council folks and have a relationship. You know, I saw some of the folks that are on Pentwater and other. I would hope that that member of Congress, you know, there's not a community that doesn't know where I live because I've been doing this job a few years. If you can't find your member of Congress, something's wrong. So call them.
Yeah.
Walk them through. You know, probably it'll be hard to get an appointment just because we're all wearing masks and I'm getting out a little bit more than I did before, and I don't know about Dan, but you know, we're doing a few things, but in essence, I'm right. Working out of my kitchen. That's where I'm walking right now. Coffee's out. But call them. Tell them how this is important. Make sure you have the bill number. Tell them it's bipartisan. Look to see if you really know your homework, like who's their friend. You know, Dan Kildee and Brett Upton, we are good friends. We got each other's back. We've done a lot of things together. Debbie Dingell and Brett Upton, yeah, we talk almost every day. You figure out who that relationship might be on either side of the aisle and get those people to weigh in. You know, I'm going to raise this. I'm meeting with a number of my community leaders in Kalamazoo on Friday. My NAACP, some of my city council members and others. I've already heard, I've heard from them. You know, they're grasping, how do we, you know, Kalamazoo went through some really tough times. They had the National Guard in, and it was peaceful for a while, and then they had one really bad night. We don't want to take a step forward, backward. We want to step forward. And that means we got to shoulder together, and that's where bipartisanship works, as it should.
Yeah, this is Dan. I agree with Fred. The most important kind of outreach is the most personal. You know, the emails that, you know, that helps because we get a sense of the volume of support. But there's nothing quite like, especially local officials, reaching out directly to that member of Congress and just saying, look, this is important to us. This will make a difference in my community. And as Fred said, this is one of those initiatives that breaks the mold of what people think about of Washington. You know, because the impression that everybody has, of course, for reasons that are not irrational, the impression is that, you know, that everything is divisive and everything is partisan. Not everything is. And, you know, here's a good example. In the Senate, we have a companion bill that's led by Cory Booker, a Democratic senator from New Jersey, and Steve Daines, a Republican senator from Montana, who was actually one of my classmates when I came to Congress. This bill in the House, Fred and I from Michigan, and Fred and I have had some success in the past when we've teamed up, whether it's on Flint or on PFAS or other bills. But also Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and Dwight Evans, a Democrat also from Pennsylvania. This is a bill that when you talk to your member of Congress, the partisan ideology doesn't even come up. This is about helping small business, helping Main Street, helping communities large and small through something that nobody planned for, that nobody could have predicted. And the cost of it, of course, while it's not insignificant, is nothing compared to the cost of us not intervening. Because when we lose these businesses, we don't just lose the employment. Like I said before, we lose the fabric of a downtown, a small town, a main street, and that's really hard to replace.
Thank you so much. I do have one more question that I want to clarify while we have you with us here. We have a few members who have hopped on and have some concerns about the funding being funneled through Lansing and not directly from the federal government. And they're concerned about smaller local governments, smaller communities missing out. So can you clarify if the CDBG formula specifically funds communities, so money allocated to each would be formula driven?
It does, and it's only for communities. Unlike other, you know, like one of the previous iterations of congressional support that was going to state and local government, this is only for local communities. So it's not like the state can take any of those dollars and divert those. And then it has to be, you know, based on a formula distribution. And so, you know, what I can do, if anyone on the call would like to reach out to the office and get into some of the sort of specific detail of that, I'd be happy to do that. But there's the 30% that's allocated to states is for use in non-entitlement areas, but it's in accordance to the formula under the Community Development Act. So it is the intention of having those non-entitlement communities have the dollars pass through the state. This is just reduce the number of transactions between the federal government and communities because the numbers that would be required would be really high. But it's based upon the formula, the allocation formula.
And just as to expand that, to talk about the SMART Act, which is the money for, as I said, the counties, cities, and states, we actually have some provisions in that bill that says that if a state tries to recapture that money, say, let's use, I don't know, Illinois, if Springfield, because some little town in Illinois gets money and Springfield wants to take it back, they can't do that. We have a prohibition on them clawing the money back and taking it all, hogging it. That's not going to happen under the SMART Act either. It's important that communities larger than 500,000 and under 500,000 have a seat at the table. And so both of these bills take into that into account.
Great. Thank you so much. Again, I want to thank Congressman Kilby and Congressman Upton for sharing this important information with all our members about the Relief for Main Street Act. After the webinar, we will email today's PowerPoint to all participants, and we'll include the contact information for their offices as well if you have direct follow-up questions. In addition, as has been the case with our other webinars on COVID-19, this will be posted in multiple formats for you to review or share on our coronavirus resource page, which can be found at www.nml.org. A few other resources of note. Each Monday at noon, we've been conducting our traditional Monday Morning Live as a new Working from Home series with our lobbying team via webinar. We'll have another Monday Morning Live coming up just next week. And next up in our series is another webinar on Thursday, June 18th from 12 to 1 p.m. titled Stop Panicking and Start Acting, 5 Steps to Save Your Small Businesses and Rebuild Your Local Economy. This will be led by Alana Proust, founder and CEO of Recast City. The webinar will focus on local leadership and what we are all willing to do to save the small businesses in our communities. Stay tuned for more information and other important webinar topics as we continue to provide you with timely updates and resources on the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you all, and that concludes our session today.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.